The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, we are here. It is Wednesday morning. I am Jared Smith. Look, I got the Penn State Cup today. I don't know. Am I allowed to show the Penn State logo on air? I don't want to disrupt any, Michigan or Ohio State people in the back. But we do have the Penn State. I'll move it to the side because I do talk. I talk with my hands a lot, and I think the worst possible thing I could do is knock that cup over and cause chaos here at the D. This is the D Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. It is a very exciting show planned for you. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin, I'm here today in for Gil Alexander. I believe it will be the Ben Wilson show the next 2 days, correct?
It will be. Also, nobody has ever in the history of this bar spilled a drink on this table.
Yeah, so that's not a first that I really want to be associated with. And not only is it a drink, it's coffee, which means if I don't get it, you will see the quality of this show decrease right, <yeah. laughs> as we go along, as the caffeine leaves me. Decent chance that entire cup gets finished before the end of the show. I digress. It is the morning after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Congratulations to the American League back in the win column after a crazy win streak. Lost last year, won last night, 5-3. Game goes over. Jaron Duran of the Red Sox is your MVP. We will have Will Hill on in this hour, who has a Jaron Duran MVP ticket to talk about. Congratulations to him. He had a few other tickets, too. But I had a chance to talk to Will Hill yesterday. I hopped on Lombardi Line with him and Stormy Bonatoni, and we were talking about MVP. We were talking about the baseball future or the baseball All-Star game. And I said, man, 5-3 has been a really popular score, you know, in baseball this year, and that feels like the right score tonight. I'm probably not betting the under. I think the Nerfy's overpriced, but I think it hits, and I think a reserve player wins the MVP because – typically, baseball games get decided at the end of the game. It's not a Shohei Ohtani 3-run home run in the, I think, third inning that would have ended up being the difference. If that was the difference, Ohtani wins MVP easily. But once we got back to 3-3 and it was the later innings, it was probably pretty obvious that the person, whoever, you know, drove in the winning run was going to be the MVP of the game. It turned out to be a home run. I think it was 50-1 on Duran.
Yeah, I've seen between like 45 and 60. So nice hit out there for anybody that was on it. I mean, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but it's just the game is so tough to bet. But I think this is, I mean, it played out last night, so it's easy to sit here and say this.
Yeah, right.
I still don't know how much I'd be recommending even making these bets every year. But like, I think that's the only type of bet you can make for this year in and year out. If you want to take one or two flyers from bench guys that you know are going to be in later in the game that might have a huge impact
on the game.
That's
the only way to do it.
Just take one or two of those and call it a day.
Well, I'll look up the text that Will sent me last night. He had Duran and Corey Seager at 50-1.
Okay, yep.
And that makes sense to me, right?
Yep.
Like, those are guys that can, you know, go deep. They've had really good years. Duran's actually had a quiet, really good year with the Red Sox. Obviously, Corey Seager, we all know him from his days with the Rangers last year in the World Series, and I think maybe not as good of a year for him offensively speaking, but still good enough to be in the All-Star game, and those picks made sense. It's a game that I'm not – I didn't even watch after the first inning. Actually, no, I take that back. I watched up to the Ohtani homer, and at that point I was like, this game's going over and Ohtani's probably winning MVP, and there really wasn't much interest for me after that. And you said you didn't watch much last night either.
There was a lot of flipping around for me last night.
We're in that time in sport. Get away from sports these next couple of days. It's going to be there later this week, guys.
I don't know what to – I mean, like, look, I'm a special example. Maybe not the perfect example.
You're very special.
Very special. Thank you, Jared.
You're very special,
like, maybe
Kelly.
Not the person that you want to design schedules around, but – When I'm battling to watch to sneak in some MLB All-Star game in between commercial breaks of the Summer League, like you watch
some Summer League.
Yeah, you might have an issue on your hands, Major League Baseball, and then and then even the Aces going last night, like that was
that was
a game that I wanted to watch a little bit of. I fell asleep halfway through it, but yeah,
we did have the Aces last night. Storm and Sparks. We had the Liberty and the Sun, Sky and Aces. It was a good game. Actually, wow, how about that? The Aces got beat by got beat by the Sky last night, improving the Rookie of the Year candidacy
Another double-double.
Another double-double. We will talk a little. Actually, I don't think we're going to. I'm not sure if we're going to talk any WNBA in the show. We might get there at some point. But coming up, this is a stacked show. I'm actually excited. It's a two-hour show. So we have eight segments in you know, four each hour, and we have half of them filled with guests. And it's a great job by my counterpart here, Kelly Bidlin. Sian Ajad's going to come on at the bottom of this hour, host of the Monumental Sports Network's gambling show. He does a lot of other good work with that network. We're going to talk, I think, a little golf, right? We got the Open Championship coming up.
Open with Sia, yep.
Starts on Thursday, and I mentioned Will Hill coming up also in this hour. We'll kind of touch them all with Will. We'll get some baseball. Maybe we'll get into some NFL as well. And then the next hour, really excited about these two guests in our final hour, or actually three guests. Two in one segment and then one separate. So kind of a group guest segment coming up. Our last segment, the two folks that host the Oddball podcast on the DraftKings Network, Charlotte Wilder and Amin El Hassan, will hop on. And then really at the bottom of the next hour, Chris Felica, really excited to talk some college football with the Bear. He will be in studio. So how about that? We have two in-studio guests coming up in our final hour. And it's going to be a slam-packed show. So we mentioned the All-Star game. Congratulations to the American League. Congratulations to Jaren Duran. Game just barely sneaks over the total by the hook. But we digress, because to me now, baseball is in the rearview mirror for at least a couple of days. I am going to act like we are not in the middle of a baseball season, and I'm going to try to catch my breath and catch up on some of the other headlines, because let's be honest, we're, I would say, what? 2 weeks away from training camp really starting to get going. I think we have a Hall of Fame game starting really soon. I think actually training camp starts next week, and then the Hall of Fame game is in 2 weeks. I might be off a little bit on the timeline there, but football season.
You got rookies starting to report this week.
Wow. I mean, football season is here, guys. And the big news that we got yesterday came from a veteran, not from a rookie. Out west, here in our neck of the woods in the Pacific time zone, San Francisco's we'll call him a disgruntled wide receiver. I think it's fair at this point to call Brandon Ayuk a disgruntled wide receiver. Officially requested a trade yesterday out of town. I have a couple thoughts on this story. I think the first thought is, yes, he deserves to get paid. Yes, I think the Niners would like to pay him. I just think it's one of those situations that is going to be very difficult to be ironed out. The Niners are in a tough spot. They have a lot of mouths to feed. I don't think they can pay Debo and Brandon Ayuk, and I just think one of them is going to leave town. This is what happens in the NFL with the salary cap. This is not an original story. It will not be the last time this happens. It's definitely not been the first time that a team has collected has drafted really well, collected a lot of good young talent, and has struggled to keep that young talent past the expiration of their rookie deal. I'll put things in perspective for you, which is the only thing I can do. I don't know when Brandon Ayuk is going to be traded. I don't know who he's going to be traded to. That is not something that I have the ability to forecast. I can tell you where he'd be a good fit. I can tell you where I'd like to see him go, but these situations are very tricky because it is all propaganda. To me, when a story gets released like it was yesterday, it is direct from the source of Brandon Ayuk's agent, and it is calculated. The reason why it was released yesterday is calculated. I don't know why, but everything surrounding these types of situations are calculated. These players have PR teams, unless you're Lamar Jackson, surrounding them, comforting them, insulating them from all of the outside noise. And whenever the trigger needs to be pulled, this was released yesterday. And now we're going to have this firestorm, frankly, for the next, I think, week or two until the Niners veterans report. But the perspective to me that's important, when you pull up Pro Football Focus's premium stats, and I hope you have a subscription. If not, if you're a football fan, if you're better, I certainly recommend it. It's very helpful. And I look up the numbers from last year. And I start to look at who had the best season in the NFL in terms of receiver grades. You don't have to go too far down the list to find Brandon Ayuk's name.
Yeah, yep.
I mean, it's basically right at the top. It's just behind Tyreek Hill, who is the best receiver in the league, deserves to be paid as such. He's ahead of Amon-Ra St. Brown. Not by much, but he's ahead of Amon-Ra St. Brown. Didn't have as many yards as Amon-Ra last year, but his receiving grade was better. Justin Jefferson. Nico Collins, who just got a $72 million contract, 50 guaranteed. CeeDee Lamb, Jaylen Waddle, A.J. Brown. These are all receivers that, according to the analytics, Pro Football Focus, Brandon Ayuk was better than last year. Not by much. I'm not saying he's this, you know, generational Jerry Rice. But in terms of last year, the spectrum of receivers in the NFL, he's right at the top. He's way ahead of Deebo Samuel, who wasn't on the field for a whole lot last year either.
And, and partially because of that, he very much became Brock Purdy's guy, right? Like that. So that is, I mean, that's part of the, that's one of the interesting parts of the story to me is that, okay, you're kind of Brock Purdy's guy. You became that last year. And if you know, well, there might be questions around receivers in the future of them, right? You know Brock Purdy is the future at quarterback right now for the San Francisco 49ers. So how much do you want to do to make sure that that guy's happy for years to come? That's the interesting part of this. But, man, it is – it's a tough spot. Players find themselves in this all the time, right? Like you're up against the end of your rookie deal. You want to get paid not just more, it's a lot more, right? And
you would expect he's going to get more than Collins.
Yeah, yeah.
And who got a lot.
Yes. And from a team perspective, like you said, I mean, you got a lot of mouths to feed, and that's not not just with making sure the ball gets around, it's with money getting around too. So I don't know. It's a tough spot, and I think when you hear a report like this, Jared, it's because the people on the inside know that there's actually been teams calling now and asking about him, and we have seen those reports out there. But San Francisco, it's really tough. What are you going to be able to get in return for a guy who's on the last year of his deal?
I think you're getting not much for him. Maybe you've got a shot to get something for Deebo. And maybe that's the only way to really get Ayuk signed. Tricky situation. Not really something I have context on until we get more news. All right, coming back, we will touch on some baseball futures. It'll be the only baseball we talk today. Stay with us, the Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up for our football special for the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl. Get that early bird discount at $175. Saves you nearly 50% off the monthly rate with VSiN Pro. Access to daily best bets, the betting splits, very popular, proven betting systems, and analysis from pro handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides. The NFL guide is out now. Expert insights, in-depth coverage will keep you informed, help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of this month. Get full VSiN access through the Super Bowl at the early bird discount price of $175. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin here with you. A Numbers Game live in downtown Las Vegas the morning after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. We've got just a couple of WNBA games before they go on Olympic break, but the main event this week is going to be the Open Championship across the pond at Royal Troon. Very excited to set my alarm at, I think, around 2 or 3 in the morning when that thing tees off on Thursday. And now to help us break it all down, he is a host and analyst at the Monumental Sports Network. Sia Najat joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Very excited to chat with you, Sia. First of all, later of a wake-up call for you there on the East Coast. I'm sure you're excited about that. But this is an event where you've got to really tweak that body clock as we go across the pond. Your history with this event. Is it one of your favorite majors on the card, on the golf schedule, or is this one of those, oh man, I better gear up because this is a weird one?
It's an interesting question. I'll say that this about the Open Championship at Royal Troon. I think it lends itself to a little bit less variance than some of the Open Championships at other courses where, you get the wrong bounce, and you can get the wrong bounce here too, but there's several instances in other Open Championships where you can get really unlucky. That goes for some other majors as well, particularly though the Open Championship, and also the wind factors in. We've got links style, we got coastal courses. So it's an interesting question because I don't like these tournaments quite as much, because anytime there's more variance or there's more variables for me to potentially build in that are largely unknown, like you can't know a bad bounce or a wind wave, or you can to some degree, but the wind can pick up and die down in unpredictable places. So I like this tournament, but I'll say this, I like this day because last week, just like this week, we've got we've got the tournament that starts at 1:30 in the morning. It's a little earlier than what we had at the Scottish Open. And then it goes through, you know, basically the early afternoon hours. But the Barracuda Championship, which I also bet on, and I'm not necessarily coming with picks for that, although I do have them, by the way. Oh. That goes to like 10 at night because that's on the West Coast out in California. So if you love golf, like don't look down on those alt tournaments. There are some real names in those tournaments, including Michael Thor Bjornsson, Keith Mitchell. Like, there's plenty of names there. If you want to watch golf all morning, all day, and all night, you can do it tomorrow, the next day, the day after that, and on Sunday as well.
I love it because it's not like there's a whole lot else going on in the sports world. I think This is a really good week. If you are someone who maybe is new to the golf betting world, set your alarm early. But again, these are some very intriguing tournaments this week. And I think when I look at your card here, it's pretty balanced. You've got a couple guys that I know. You've got a couple guys at the bottom of the board. You've got some matchups. You've got some finishing positions. So let's start at the top. Colin Morikawa, right at the top of your outright leaderboard here. Anything intriguing about Morikawa this week that pushed you to make a wager on him?
Yeah, it's the state of his game right now. And I'll tell you, my outright card, you're going to see it right here. You see it on the screen. You're going to hear it in a second. And it's a little unorthodox because I've peppered the long shot board because I think there's value there a little bit more than I normally do. Like last week, I had 3 outrights total, including long shots. This week, I have 7 because like 4 to 5 of them, actually, you could say all 6 out of 7 are long shots. The one that's not a long shot is your first question here. It's Colin Morikawa. Why do I like him at plus 1600? I honestly think he should be like plus 1200. Plus 1400. I still like that number at plus 1400 because some books have adjusted it down. The state of his game right now, ever since the PGA Championship in early May, has been so good. He's gained across every single metric almost every single time. And you just can't say that about everybody else. You can say it about Rory in large part. You can say about Scottie Scheffler, but then it's Colin Morikawa. And then you look at their odds compared to Colin Morikawa's, and I just see way more value. Add in the context that, yeah, he's missed the last 2 cuts at Open Championships, but he won the year before that. He's probably coming in hotter than any of those 3 years in terms of the state of his game right now and the strokes gain metrics. And he's a good course fit because I mentioned it. Like when I'm talking about players I like, I'm looking for like a balanced approach. I'm looking for an accurate approach, good with long irons and good with the short game. And Colin checks all those boxes. So at plus 1600, there's no looking back. I knew I was going to bet him kind of regardless of the number, but I also knew he wasn't going to be like 10 to 1. So I can talk about the other 6 very quickly, but Morikawa at plus 1600 is my very favorite player.
Yeah, see, I love that. I'm all over Morikawa with you this week as well. I think if you're putting a premium on accuracy off the tee, he's one of those top guys in the field this week, and he makes a lot of sense. And hasn't finished worse than T16 since before the Masters. That's what we're talking about with Morikawa. He's due here at any point. Masters finished T3, PGA T4, US Open T14. So he's played the majors well here as well. There's one name on your card that stuck out to me that I'm interested to see how some people like yourself handle this week. And it is Patrick Cantlay. You're getting at a long price with a little bit of an unknown coming into this tournament. What led you to making that bet?
So here's my take on superstars. This is a general take that I always have. I am willing to, and maybe he's not a superstar in people's mind. Let's just call him stars because people are going to take umbrage with the superstar label. And I totally get that. But when it comes to stars, when it comes to the talent level that Patrick Cantlay has, I'm willing to take them regardless of what their form has been previously. Now, in Cantlay's case, the form was really bad, right? But if you look at the last 2 tournaments, oh my gosh, this looks like the old Patrick Cantlay. And you might say to yourself, well, that's just a 2 tournament sample size. But that goes back to the general axiom that I have about these star players. And that's that I don't necessarily need a big sample. I might need a big sample size with, you know, Hank Lebiota or some guy that's like not really generally on the PGA Tour. But when it comes to Patrick Cantlay, I don't need much of a sample size. I've seen him ramp it up over the last 8 rounds, over the last 2 tournaments, and look like the old Patrick Cantlay. And if he is the old Patrick Cantlay, well, his number shouldn't be 45 to 1, should it? It should be 20 to 1 tops, maybe 16 or 18 to 1. So I feel like I'm getting tremendous value at anything north of 40, and you can find him at plus 4,500. It's also part of the reason I'm playing him in DFS, because not a lot of people are going to want to click that button. And I just think he can give you, you can play a lot of chalky guys, and he can give you the ownership leverage you need, because not a lot of people want to play Patrick Cantlay. I'll just mention Shane Lowry's another guy. I just think he's a really good course fit. We know he's good on link style courses and he's good on this side of the pond, obviously, but we know he can also really get hot with the putter. And as far as the Colin Morikawa type build, the Colin Morikawa type player. I'm just going to mention my long shots in that same vein. And three out of four of them remind me a lot of Colin Morikawa. Corey Connors at 70-1, Aaron Wright 80-1, and Akshay Bitti at 110-1. All of these guys can hit fairways. All these guys can get hot with the putter to varying degrees. Aaron Wright has certainly added a putter to his bag over the last few tournaments. Corey Connors is Colin Morikawa light, and I do think he's live to win this tournament potentially. Akshay, good in the wind, has been very good lately, has kind of fluttered away on Sundays, but it's 110-1. The only other guy that doesn't necessarily fit that mold, and this is the seventh guy, and again, a lot of these are 70-1 or longer, so I'm just sprinkling on these guys just so everybody knows. I'm chasing Adam Scott and what he did last week. I don't necessarily think he's the best course fit, but the form last week kind of reminded me of where he was at earlier this year. I don't want to say he's a big game hunter, but he certainly looked like that last week at the Scottish Open, so it's 70-1. I'm willing to speculate.
Sia Najat, host and analyst of the Monumental Sports Network, joins us now, talking a little Open Championship, which starts Thursday at Royal Troon. I noticed Brian Harman also on your card, of course, the defending champion. Put him in a matchup here with Max Homa. Were you surprised at the odds? Because to me, when I just look at the, if I just close my eyes and think about those two players, I would rank Homa in front of Harman. But I guess the course layout here and maybe Harman's experience across the pond pushed you across the finish line with this bet.
Yeah, both those things are true. Those are both things that push me across taking a Harman here. But the thing is, the state of Homa's game is just bad. And I don't think it corrects itself out here. Brian Harman obviously won the Open Championship at a different course last year. But the long and short of it is he does fit that sort of Colin Morikawa mold. He's a grinder. He'll keep it in the fairway. The approach play and the putting can get hot. Homa's been bad with the driver, and he's just been kind of bad in general. I think this line is telling you something, because you're right. Max Homa has the name recognition. Brian Harman kind of does, but not as much as Max Homa. And yet, Brian Harman is still a minus 125 favorite. That should tell you all you need to know about how the market is treating these two.
100% agree. Usually when your eyes tell you something that your brain is like, I don't know if I agree with that. Sometimes that's the market's way of trying to push you in the right direction. Well, we appreciate your time, Sia. Good luck with the early wake-up calls this week and the Open Championship card, my friend.
Love it. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Good stuff. And I'm going to probably do a deep dive tonight on your guys' podcast. I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch this segment to soak up some of Sia's wisdom, because there ain't a whole lot going on tomorrow in sports. I might as well put a bet out there for a first-round lead or something. I mean, literally, what is happening tomorrow in sports? I could take the day off gambling.
You could do that.
But that's probably not going to happen. So let's not bet on that.
Full long shots up now. Wherever you get your podcast, we're also up on YouTube if you want to watch the show yesterday with Wes Reynolds, myself, and Dave Ross filling in for that.
How about that? Will Hill filling in with us next. A little baseball futures talk. Stay with us on A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back on A Numbers Game live from downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin, and joining us in studio, this is a thrill. We get him here. I know you've been in town for the last
a couple of days,
and usually that's the end of the end of the Vegas bender there. You're ready to go home. This is Chris Felik, of course, of Fox Sports. Does a fantastic job not only covering college football, but very busy soccer summer for you as well, sir.
It's been a while. I was in LA. I was in LA for 5 weeks for the soccer. Came here for a couple of days to enter Circus Survivor and some other contests as well. Met up with my man Tom from Vegas Football Proxy. He took care of me. And then I got to go back to L.A. Tomorrow for our annual football meetings. So it was kind of silly to fly home to Connecticut just to stay home for a day and then fly back here to go to the meeting. So I was able just to come here, knock out
take a nice little you take a nice little siesta in Vegas for a couple of days, see a couple guys about a couple things, get the business end of the spectrum. It is always interesting, we get these meccas to Vegas in the August, late July, early August months, because the contests, and you were talking about Circa, but all over town. It is like, I think it's like a rat race. Like, it feels like New York City commuting, getting everywhere. Like, there's like a week in August where like everyone comes and just signs up for the contest. And it's like one of the busiest weeks of the year where there's like nothing going on except for preseason NFL and people signing up for contests. So I'm glad you could take advantage of that. All right, let's get to college football because it's such a different year You have expanded playoffs. You have SEC adding teams. You have Pac-12 turning into the Pac-2 and kind of evolving or devolving into whatever they're going to turn into. There's a lot of upheaval. But when there is upheaval, sometimes the markets kind of miss some things.
Yeah.
Is there something specific that you're looking at? We were discussing maybe to make the playoff or the division odds in the in each conference. It is a unique year in the futures market because of all the moving parts.
Yeah, I think especially if you look in the Big 12, first of all, I think I would look at like the compare the odds to make the playoff compared with odds to win the Big 12, because I don't think the Big 12 is getting multiple teams in.
Nope.
So see if it, see whatever team you may like and take the longer of the two price. If there is a difference, maybe they've caught on and have priced it accordingly, but maybe the odds to make the playoff are longer than they are to win the conference. So that would be something to play in. And I don't know with the bigger conferences and these big name teams, if they have caught on to like, there is a chance. I mean, basically, for Ohio State or Georgia not to make the playoff, they're probably going to finish lower than third.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to happen. So, like, I don't know if like these prices to make the playoff and some of these big name contenders are long enough yet.
Yeah. And it is interesting because a lot of these books, you can parlay futures prices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is becoming a very popular way to play futures, especially if you can space it out by season. But if you can parlay teams to make the playoff and take, let's say, an Ohio State, which is basically a $6 favorite, yep, Georgia's a $5 favorite to make the playoff, in order for those teams not to make the playoff, it has to be a disaster, yes, of a season. And if you could take a minus 650, minus 550, and shorten those odds and get yourself in a good spot, you can play off of that as we get, yes, later in the year, because one game is going to determine it. So once you get to the end of the year, odds are one game is going to determine yay or nay making it to the playoffs. And then if you've got a nice ticket in your hand in your back pocket you've been sitting on all year, you can find some ways to find some value.
And the way these rankings take place, what the committee look at, like even if Georgia were to lose their three games that they have, Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss,
yeah,
like 9-3, Georgia, SEC beat everybody else, like they're still going to be right there on the – right on the edge,
yes,
and they probably won't lose all three of them,
no,
but it's going to take that in order for them not to make the playoff. In Ohio State, they got the game at Oregon, they got the Michigan game, they got Penn State, but like they're not going to lose all three of those. So
no.
I don't know. That's just something that if you have no issue throwing a couple teams together in a parlay and laying a number like that, I think that's a good investment.
I think the SEC and the Big Ten are the two conferences that I'm most intrigued to see what the vibe is.
Mm-hmm.
New travel, that is, and as someone who travels all the,
yeah,
time, that is important because these teams, the programs, the recruits, they're all used to going through a certain routine, and now you throw that routine off, especially the coaching and the scouting. There are going to be some wild upsets, I think, this year when you have these Oregons going across the country, vice versa going west, east going west, west going east. It feels like chaos. It always feels like chaos, but this year I think it's going to be ratcheted up to another
degree. And I think as well, if you look at the new teams to the SEC, the Texas and Oklahoma, yes, Texas went to Bryant Denny in one last year and Alabama, but they're going to have to back that up now,
exactly,
with another it's not like they're going to be playing
any random Big 12 team.
Exactly. And they're not going to be playing Cincinnati the week or whoever
BYU.
It was. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they're going to be playing another like legit,
yeah,
difficult team. Like even a team like Mississippi State or Arkansas, who are two of the lower expected win total teams in the SEC. Like that's not a gimme. I don't know who Texas plays after some of their big games this year, but it's not. And people who are like not SEC folk, here you go again, but waxing poetic and preaching about the SEC. But it is different, the quality of those teams. So look, Texas has recruited great lately, and maybe they are up to snuff to be able to do that. Oklahoma, I'd be a little worried about. I think Oklahoma is still a little young. They might be a year away with Arnold and some of the good recruiting classes that they've had the last couple of years.
And I'm not fully sold on Venables yet as a head coach. I think as a defensive coordinator, he's fantastic. But to me, when you make that ascension to the head coaching spot, there's a lot of wrinkles to iron out. Speaking of that, I was watching a segment this morning, SEC Media Day, mm-hmm, and I saw Kalen DeBoer. Actually, he's on the screen right now.
There he is.
Kalen DeBoer Alabama head coach.
It's weird.
Man, that looks
weird.
That looks weird, right? Like, it's going to be an adjustment not only for Alabama, but I think just college football in general getting used to a very different regime in Tuscaloosa.
And that's going to be the biggest, one of the bigger questions. It's funny, you just see Nick Saban on with Feinbaum, and he doesn't have the little Alabama pin on his lapel either. Like, that's another different thing. But I think if you look at, I lost my train of thought.
Still has his office though in the house. He does.
He does.
He looks great.
But I think that's going to be the thing. Like, Alabama, we saw what Alabama was before Nick Saban got there and struggled for a really long time between Gene Stallings and Nick, and there were so many different coaches. Like, what was Alabama truly just the Nick Saban dynasty, or is Alabama back to being what they were under other coaches as well? That's going to be the interesting thing, because this guy has won everywhere he's been, hasn't necessarily had the best talent wherever he's been, but he wins games as underdogs. Like, you saw them beat Oregon a couple times last year. You saw them get in the playoff and pull an upset over Texas. This guy can coach. And I wouldn't be betting against him to put up another 9 or 10 win season this year.
The Big Ten is always close to my heart. Penn State alum. We had a chance to talk about Penn State a little bit when you hopped on earlier this summer. I'm still in the same boat with them, but the rest of the Big Ten to me is intriguing, because you get this now divide where you have USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, all these teams kind of going across the country here. Is there one of those newcomers that you feel really strongly about? Obviously, Oregon's the low-hanging fruit. But do you think that maybe – I guess that's a great way to focus on it. Dan Lanning, I think, is a fantastic coach. Oregon, to me, has all of the tools. But the Big Ten is a gauntlet. Do you think that gauntlet is what maybe trips up the Ducks or any of these other Pac-12 schools that are entering into a very different landscape?
Yeah, I am down on both USC and UCLA, but both of the LA schools. I think UCLA is headed towards a really bad season, and I don't think SC has the talent level that people think that they have now that Caleb's departed. The difference with Oregon is they've beaten these Big Ten teams in the past. They've beaten Ohio State and Columbus, and even going back, they've beaten Wisconsin. They've gone to play maybe Michigan State. They've gone to these teams and either won or lost maybe a close game. And the way Dan Lanning has built this team, he's built them like an SEC program. They've got one of the deeper NIL budgets in the country to be able to get whomever they want. And they have a very difficult home, I shouldn't say very difficult, a very, very difficult place for opponents to go play. They have one of the better home field advantages in the country. I don't think this Big Ten gauntlet is going to trip up Oregon at all. I think it was funny. I think the answer to the question, like I posed this to someone the other day, like, if Ohio State or Georgia do not win the national championship, who would it be? And Oregon was like the immediate answer.
Yeah, Oregon makes a lot of sense to me. Go ahead, Kel.
No, I have not heard that, I feel like, from anybody else. That's interesting.
They're the fourth favorite on the board right now. I heard some buzz for Ole Miss. I don't know if you have any thoughts about their roster heading into the year. We know Lane Kiffin can coach. The roster's good, but I think they're one of those teams that's just super volatile, upside down.
I was going to say, they always seem to have one of those games, and I love Lane, and I'm so happy that he's done well now. I think he took a little bit of a bad rap and some heat for a while, and with some of the off the field stuff, but he has proven that he can coach. And again, they brought some guys in. They lost Judkins to Ohio State, which is a big deal, but they still have a lot of talent. I just wonder though. I still think that they're a team where, like you said, one week they'll find themselves in a game with someone that they probably shouldn't. And I'm not sure that they're quite up to the beating Georgia level yet.
I agree. Chris Felica, enjoy the season. Good luck.
I will.
Enjoy the rest of your time in Vegas. We appreciate it.
I will. Going to have to take a walk behind us right now and make some wagers.
That's the beauty of this show, is we do some television, you make some wagers.
Chris is winning the
Open.
That's
the way it works. Oh, that's a good question.
Xander or Oberg? Those are the two that I've landed on.
Like Oberg, top debutant, 2-1 is a bet I got to make. I love it. Great stuff. We'll talk to some DraftKings people on the other side. A little NBA. Stay with us here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, let's wrap up the show. Jared Smith, Kelly Bidlin here, downtown Las Vegas, hanging out at the D. This is a numbers game. And joining us now, back-to-back again, Kelly Bidlin deserves the MVP trophy today for booking such a fantastic show. We go from Chris Felica to Amin El Hassan, host of the Oddball podcast on the DraftKings Network. We go from college football to the NBA. Amin, it's great to have you here, pal. You're in town for Summer League. It's been an exciting time. Of course, the NBA kind of resets their fiscal year this week as we get into a new season. Before we get to some of the big picture stuff, your overall takeaways from Summer League, is there anything that you can kind of draw as like, hey, I'm watching this kid or I'm watching this team and I'm really excited to look right at them going into the year?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you look at Summer League, really 90% of it is this is our winter meetings, right? Sure. It's a convention. Everybody's here. And the other thing is everybody's in a good mood. Everyone always feels like, hey, we had a great offseason. We drafted a kid we really like. We signed someone. We traded for someone. We hired a new coach that we really like. And so it was a lot more open, a lot more giving and talking. Obviously, Las Vegas is a fun place to be. A lot of great restaurants and things to get into. So that's the value of this thing. It's the convention aspect of it. But then when you look at the games, you look at the players out there. I was asked this question yesterday. I said, you know, it's not necessarily like what your stats were or did you win all your games or not. I want to see, do you know how to play? Right?
Yeah.
Are you doing the right things? Maybe not getting the right results in the moment, but are you playing the right way? And then if not, or if adversity hits, how are you responding to all that? And that's the thing you look at. So a great example of this, I could say, is that I don't think Kristaps Porzingis had a great summer league when he came over.
Sure.
But I remember watching him and said, you know what? He's playing with a bunch of guards who aren't going to be in the NBA the next year. These guys are all just trying to make a name for themselves, dribbling the air out of the ball and shooting every time because they think that's what's going to get them noticed. And this kid is setting the screen right every single time. He's not getting discouraged. A lot of times bigs will do it 2-3 times. Like, they're never looking for me. Why am I even doing this right? So that always stood out to me when I watched him. And every year there's someone you watch and you say, okay, like I noticed this about you. And I think those are the things that you can project. But at the end of the day, this is the best analogy I can give you. Like, summer league is like freshman orientation going to college.
Okay.
Is that college? No.
Oh.
Could you show up to freshman orientation bright and early with your pencil sharpened and taking notes and be a terrible college student? Yes. Could you also show up?
Sounds like me.
Could you also show up drunk, out of your mind, throwing up in the middle of the orientation session and making a fool of yourself and still end up being a pretty good college student? Also,
yeah,
that could happen. So, it can tell us right now where you're at. But it's not going to tell us where you're going to be 10 years from now or even 5 years from now.
Yeah, I think fundamentals. Do you have the fundamentals to play? Do you have the mindset to come in and work hard? And the rest takes care of itself. You've got to be in a good situation. You've got to play for a team that can put you in the best chance to succeed. And that brings us to a player that I think it not only has been playing here in Summer League, but also is kind of been questioned in that regard, and that's Bronny James. And I don't want to make this a hot take. I don't want to make this a controversial thing. When you watch him, do you get those same vibes? Fundamentals, yes, but maybe just needs time to develop.
Yeah, I mean, this is the weird thing. So a lot of times when we talk about guys, top 7 pick, top 10 pick. And so we are searching for those positives because, like, hey, it was top 10 for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, just give it time or whatever.
Right.
This kid's the 55th pick. So I thought we all knew he's not going to be NBA ready this year. The Lakers said it. J.J. Redick said he's a development project. He's a developmental project. So when he comes here and everyone's kind of harshly judging him like he's supposed to be ready to play right now, I said, no one ever said that. Maybe his dad said it. But other than that, everyone else involved in his like career has said this is a work in progress. And so, you know, he went out there. He did not shoot well. He did not make good decisions. He turned it over a lot. But I never saw him frustrated once. I never saw him lash out. I never saw him kind of like be a bad teammate. And are those things alone going to carry him to a great NBA career? No, but as long as he's got the work ethic and the opportunity to be developed, and that doesn't mean minutes at the NBA level, but like just working with the coaches, I think in like 2 or 3 years, he can be a solid NBA role player.
Do you think we will see the Lakers force him into action at some point?
That was going to be my next question.
I think from the basketball standpoint, the realistic expectation should be a couple years, right? I mean,
yes. So I would say preseason for sure.
Sure,
he'll get some time out there, especially like in the second half where everyone's like, "What are we doing?
Right.
Why are we playing our guys?" I think he's going to start the year down in the G League, I mean, he might start on the roster and never play, but right. then whenever G League starts, he's going to go there. He's going to be there the whole year. And I think at some point at the end of the year, depending on like what's happening in the Lakers season, he gets the call up and maybe you get a game in with your dad.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That's the voice of Amin El Hassan, host of the Oddball podcast on the DraftKings Network. Excited to talk a little NBA. All right, so I'll throw some of these random Bronny props at you.
Okay.
And you tell me if this has any – there's really only two of them I'm interested in, and they're okay. posted on DraftKings right now. They're both around even odds. So, again, they're kind of coin flip bets. Do we think he's going to score 15 points or more in any game this year?
No.
I agree.
Is there a no option on any of these?
No, that's why I'm not. That's why I'm not betting these. The one that does intrigue me, and this one's priced a little bit more aggressively. This one's plus 120. Him to make three threes in a game this year.
I mean, if he made three threes, he's gonna score 15 points.
Exactly.
In that game.
So that's why I wouldn't bet the 15 points, which is minus 110. I would go to the three threes because you're right. If he makes three threes in a game, odds are he's gonna get to 15 points.
Right.
That one feels a little bit more palatable because three shots, right?
Yeah.
Like it's random. Like he could have a game where, you know, they're down by 40 to the Mavericks in like March and they throw him in there and just give him some run.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially like, you know, early in his career, his opportunities to score are going to come from one of two things. Transition.
Sure.
Or I was sitting there in the corner waiting and someone and my feet are set, my eyes are wide open and my heart is clear, whatever, you know? So I guess that could happen. Definitely, to me, in my mind, more likely than 15 points.
No
like
reason it. To bet him now, though, because as Amin's talking, like the whole idea is it's going to be, if we see him at
if
all, it's going to be later in the season.
In
wait till he actually gets called up. Then you can bet props then.
And decent chance that if he starts the season in the G League, these numbers decrease and you can get a better price down the road. All right, speaking of prices that were changing, Philly's price was the biggest mover in the offseason. Of course, the Paul George move basically has them on par right now with some of the other top teams in the Eastern Conference. I think the biggest question I've heard some back and forth, Knicks, Sixers. I think those are the two, right, the next teams behind Boston. Even with the deal for Paul George, do you think that did enough to put the Sixers in front of the Knicks? Or do you think what the Knicks did last year and getting Brunson back on that reduced contract, some more flexibility? I know they lost Isaiah Hartenstein. Which one of those two teams do you prefer?
So the win totals came out. DraftKings put out the win totals. Knicks were at 52.5, I believe, and Sixers at 51.5.
Yep, we got them on the screen right now. Basically right neck and neck.
Right. I believe the delta there is about people's lack of confidence in the health of Joel Embiid, and to a lesser extent, the health of Paul George, who hasn't been exactly Iron Man either. Mm-hmm. I think that's all being represented right there. On paper, the Sixers are a more talented team. They just are. Joel Embiid is MVP of the league, where he was a year ago.
He could be.
And it could be again.
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson to be MVP, even as great as he played this last year, still is kind of like, all right, you guys need to win 60 games. And it's a lot of caveats to get him to MVP caliber, whereas Embiid is like legitimately, I'm one of the five best players in the NBA. I'm on the MVP ballot every single season, right? Paul George, again, a 3-and-D guy extraordinaire, can create. And then their other offseason moves that they did, adding Caleb Martin.
Yeah.
Who's a young vet who's played deep in the playoffs, played in the NBA Finals, had a hell of a Game 7 against Boston a year ago. You add Andre Drummond, who at this point, serviceable backup center. Even a guy like, Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
Can come in off the bench, give you some scoring pop. I like how Daryl Morey rounded out this roster with guys that are experienced but can still have some productivity. To me, I think the Sixers, I mean, it feels like a good bet, but the reason why it is because they know Joel Embiid gets hurt and this whole math changes.
As far as the injuries go, I mean, is it too much pressure on Jalen Brunson this year? I just look at that team. I love the makeup and what we saw in the postseason, but man, it's going to require consistent scoring at a high level from Jalen Brunson, it feels like to me.
So in a weird way, the Knicks have kind of the same conversation, albeit not with their best player, right?
Yeah.
With Philly, it's your best player. With the Knicks, it's like, OG Anunoby, is he going to stay healthy? Is Josh Hart not going to fall apart? Is Julius Randle going to be healthy? And those are the kind of things right there. I think Mikal Bridges really adds another dimension to them. But the Knicks are always going to have to be the overachieving team because talent-wise, they're not more talented than Boston, and they're not more talented than the Sixers. And I'll argue, they're not even more talented than the Bucks.
Right.
That one's a debate, especially because we didn't see Dame's best stuff last year, and we didn't see really that team come together at all. And I think they have a lot of growing to do as well. Definitely does not have a lot of growing to do. Amin El-Hassan of the Oddball Podcast on the DraftKings Network. Go check it out. Enjoy the time in Vegas, pal.
Absolutely. My flight's in a couple hours. I'm out of here.
Summer League has that way of creeping up on you. All of a sudden, now it's football season as the NBA says farewell to their Summer League fun. Great stuff. Awesome show. Sia Najad came on. Will Hill, Chris Felica, Larry, Matt, and Sean in the back. Kelly Bidlin, I'm Jared Smith. This is A Numbers Game on VSiN. Stay with us.